This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Swings and he hits a drive. He hits a slammer.
Graybar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs.
Billikens win! Billikens win!
Now from the Stifel Financial Sports Studio, Tom Ackerman.
Hey, welcome to the show. We've got some stuff going on, don't we? My goodness, what a day yesterday of sports. Everything's going on. We have a lot of guests coming up, and I'm going to give you the list in just a moment. But how are we doing today, Mizzou fans? How are we doing, Illinois fans? How are we doing, Blues fans? And college football alive and well. What a crazy day yesterday, no doubt about it. We're going to hear an interview that Brady Cook did with ESPN in just a moment. After an unbelievable day yesterday for Cook and the Missouri Tigers and their fans, homecoming is a special day in Columbia, without question. They have claim to the first ever homecoming. They're the ones who originated it, as the story goes. And they celebrate it there in Columbia. Always has been a great tailgating scene in Columbia at Faurot Field. And sometimes tailgaters will kind of linger. Some people don't go into the game. My daughter told me she had some friends who went to Columbia to go hang out in the parking lot. Not everybody can get a ticket to go see the Auburn game. Well, what if you're tailgating and a car goes by, driven by an athletic trainer, and Brady Cook's riding in it in the middle of the game? You're like, Is that the quarterback just now going through town, going through the tailgate? Where is he going? He's going to the hospital because Brady Cook injured his ankle in the first series of the ball game yesterday against Auburn, and the Tigers were in trouble. They put their backup, Drew Pine, in there, and they found themselves down in this game 3-0. It was 3-3, but they really stalled, and Cook, whose ankle was injured to the point where he had to get an MRI, was placed in a vehicle and taken to University Hospital. And if anyone's ever had an MRI, they put you in this tube and you sit there and you have no contact with the outside world. And so he had no contact with what was going on at Faurot Field. And you basically, because you are not allowed electronics, you have to sit there and wait for a while for the results, and you have nothing. You have you and walls and a ceiling. And that's basically what he had, except maybe a little update every once in a while from whoever accompanied him to the hospital telling him what the score was. I'm sure he didn't like the score when he heard, when he came back to Faurot Field after the MRI, that they were down 17-3. But Brady Cook, the St. Louisan, the Chaminade product, the often criticized quarterback, I should add, not only in the beginning of last year, and then he turned everybody around then, he has done it again. Because he was criticized heavily after the Texas A&M game, and he did not have a good game, but neither did Missouri. They could not block to save their lives. They couldn't do anything right in that game, nothing. They couldn't run the ball. They couldn't block. They couldn't tackle. They couldn't do anything. And they certainly couldn't protect Brady. So when he went 13-for-31, I thought he got unfair criticism, but I also saw a quarterback that didn't look 100%. He had acknowledged this last week that a lower body injury had hampered him a little bit. Well, here he goes with now an ankle injury. But he comes back to Faurot Field. Missouri is down 17-3. But he engineers drives. He immediately hits Theo Weiss for a 72-yard pass to get Missouri in position to score. And they do just that. They cross the goal line with a touchdown to make it a more interesting game. And the crowd is back into it. He hit Weiss for that big, big gainer, and then they were able to punch it in and get themselves an opportunity on a Marcus Carroll touchdown. Then late in the game, a dramatic drive, again, engineered by Brady Cook on his own 5. And he's not just throwing passes, and they're great passes, but he's scrambling on that ankle. I don't know what they did. They didn't talk about how they treated the ankle, but they did something that took the pain away momentarily. I don't know how he's going to feel today. By the way, we tried to get him on the show today, and we were told by Mizzou that he was getting treatment at this time. So we hope for the best and hope that, everything is okay with Brady. But he looked yesterday like an absolute warrior. And he's running, he's scrambling, he's throwing, he's making plays. And it's a 95-yard, 17-play drive that ends in a touchdown into the hands of Jamal Roberts, a run with 46 seconds to go. Missouri takes the lead, and they win the game 21-17 over Auburn, a desperate team. They hand Auburn their fifth loss of the year. They're done. They have been done for a while, and Missouri's very much alive. They're 6-1 after a win and on the field with ESPN. This was on a national broadcast, by the way, on ESPN in front of the world. Here is Brady Cook.
Come back out, your team down two scores. How did you pull off this win?
I don't know. I really don't. You know, that second quarter, you know, I sat in silence and we were figuring out what we had to figure out. And I came back and I just knew we weren't going to lose this game. Not on homecoming, not today, not like this. We weren't going to lose.
You're emotional. What brings you to tears?
Oh, I am emotional. I am. You know, Mizzou means so much to me. You know, the first six games, you know, they haven't gone the way I wish they would have in a lot of ways. And to come out here the first drive and get hurt and to be down, to think I'm not going to come back in the game and then find a way. And we just manifest it. We get it done. We fight, and we win. It's just, I'm emotional right now.
How were you able to fight and get back into this game?
You know, shout out to our trainers. But I've played through stuff before. I've been through adversity before, physically, emotionally, mentally. This isn't anything new. It's just another step.
What did you learn about your team today?
I learned that we're going to fight. I learned that my energy, my leadership means something to them. I learned that for sure when I came out in the third quarter. And I learned that they're always going to fight.
Congratulations, Brady.
Do not count out Brady Cook just yet, then, now, or in the future. This guy is big time. That is a big time effort by Brady Cook, the Missouri quarterback. And Missouri will have its hands full. We all know that. We got it. Against Alabama on Saturday at 2:30. But Alabama's not Alabama from last year. They're a little shaky. Their defense raises a lot of questions. Get this ball in the hand of Luther Burden as often as possible, please. And Missouri has a shot against Alabama. But Missouri with a great win, a comeback win, a had-to-have-it win, and Brady Cook gets the job done. Illinois, a wonderful win at home against Michigan. We're going to take a break. We're going to be joined by the radio voice of the Fighting Illini, Brian Barnhart, and break that one down for you. Just how good is Illinois? They're good. 21-7, they beat Michigan. We'll talk to Brian next on KMOX.
Postman swings and he hits a drive. He hits a slammer.
Graybar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs.
Milliken's win! Milliken's win!
Once again, from the Stiefel Financial Sports Studio, Tom Ackerman.
Oh, the college football world is swirling. What an incredible Saturday it was. And let's go to Champaign. Champaign, Illinois was hopping yesterday. Illinois with a win over Michigan 21-7. Missouri won over Auburn. All kinds of great stuff happening yesterday. But let's go to Illinois right now in the voice of the Illini, Brian Barnhart on KMOX. Hello, Brian.
Hey, Tom. Good morning to you.
Good morning. What a time this is to be a member of the Fighting Illini broadcast team and of that program. Brett Bielema's got them going 21-7 over Michigan. And you could say that Michigan is down and you'd be correct. You could also say that Illinois is up and you would be absolutely correct. Those were two Big Ten heavyweights going at it, and the Illini came out victorious.
Well, they did, and you're right, Tom, and there was so much going on, of course, with the 100th anniversary of the, almost to the day, plus one day of the Red Grange game back in 1924. They had a wonderful rededication ceremony on Friday. They had a gala with all the great Illini football players on Friday night, and then, of course, the game. The weather was terrific, and then the outcome was terrific, and just all that it was eerie because it was the 77th ever sellout. Of course, that was Grange's number, 77th ever sellout at Memorial Stadium. It was the margin of victory was 14, 7 plus 7. I mean, there was like sevens everywhere. It was like Red Grange was running the show yesterday. And it was, you know, but this current Illinois team is a really good team, Tom. And I know, much like your Indiana Hoosiers, it's a pretty cool time right now.
It sure is. I just got word that College Game Day is going to be in Bloomington for the Indiana game on Saturday. Unbelievable. I'm just like, and I'm going to the game. So it's just, you know, it's, I feel like I'm living, and I'm sure you feel this way too, like I'm in a dream, and no one has tapped me on the shoulder yet to wake me up. I mean, this is exactly what you want. If you're a fan of a team that has been knocked around for years, and Illinois, while it has had good years, it's been frustrating, hasn't it, Brian?
It has, and you know this. I mean, it's been, you know, very high highs. We know a Sugar Bowl, a Rose Bowl, a couple of bowl games, and then, you know, 2-10 seasons. And, you know, just too much up and down. And that's the one thing Brett Bielema promised when he came. He said, look, I want to be consistent. We're going to be tough, dependable. We're not going to beat ourselves. And he's kind of built that team in his image where it's, you know, Illinois doesn't beat themselves very often. And if there is adversity, they bounce back from it. You know, they had a really scary game last week against Purdue in the second half, one of the wilder games I've ever seen, where Purdue scored 40 points in the second half. They still managed to find a way to win. And then they were never really threatened by Michigan yesterday. I mean, Michigan had the more time of possession. Michigan had a couple of long drives, but the defense got the turnovers. You know, the kicking game, the punting was terrific with Hugh Robertson. It was very complimentary football that coaches talk about all the time, and that was no fluke yesterday. They played really, really well.
Tell me about Altmyer, and when you first laid eyes on him, when Illinois was able to get him, did you envision that this would be the offense that he would be signal calling?
Well, you know, you hoped it would, but, you know, he had not really played that much. You know, as you know, at Ole Miss, he was a backup. He had maybe started a game or two, but not really a regular part of their rotation. And then he struggled early here. He had the one game against Penn State early in the year where he threw four interceptions. But from that point on, he just kind of steadily got more comfortable with Barry Lunney's offense, the offensive coordinator. He settled in. He was playing really well at the end of the year, and then he got hurt, and then John Paddock came out of nowhere and threw for a stadium record 500 and some yards against, I think it was Indiana, in an overtime game last year, and then finished the season, and Luke never got back in. And then his second year under Barry Lunney, he just looks confident. You can feel that. The guys tell me in the huddle how confident how much confidence he exudes when he's out there. What has he got, 15 touchdowns and one interception? I can count on one hand, Tom, the bad decisions he's made this year, or maybe poor decisions or bad throws. There just haven't been any. Even when he's under pressure, he does the smart thing, or if he runs it, he knows when to get down. He's just really playing extremely well, and he's a big part of the reason why Illinois is 6-1 already.
They sure look like Brett Bielema's best teams. You know, they really do. At Wisconsin, one of those teams that could be so tough to move on the line. And I think that was a concern too, Brian, wasn't it? That you'd be able to replace, especially on the defensive line, what you lost last year?
Well, yeah, Johnny Newton, of course, went to the Washington Commanders. Keith Randolph had gone to the Bears. They were concerned. And Dennis Briggs comes in from Florida State. He's an older guy. I think he's 24, 25 years old and been around a while. And T.Ry Edwards is a guy that came in from Northwestern 3 years ago that not a lot of people talked about. And on two plays yesterday, he had a sack to end a Michigan drive, forced him a field goal, and then he blocked a kick in back-to-back plays. And so those guys are playing really well. I don't know if they fully replaced a guy like Johnny Newton, but they certainly have, as defensively, are tough. They've got several interceptions this year. They had a couple of fumble recoveries yesterday. And it's just playing well, and you know it takes all this, Tom, in the three facets of the game. You know, your special teams are solid. They've got really good kickers. You know, the defense is solid. It needed to be better against the run. It was against Michigan, a very good running team. And then the offense, two deep threats in Pat Bryan and Zachary Franklin. Hank Beatty's coming on as he's the Big Ten's leading punt returner. And so you're right. I think it resembles a lot of his teams that he had success with, especially at Wisconsin. And I think they can even be better. Now, they're going to get a test this week at I don't know if they're already number one or not, but Oregon. That's the next game, and we'll see if they can build on what they did yesterday and go out there and try to steal one.
Yeah, I think it'll be announced at 1 o'clock that Oregon will be number one. What do you think you have to do to make that a competitive game, just to hold on to the football, I would imagine? Time of possession is a big deal.
Right, time of possession, keep it out of Gabriel's hands, You know, they've got an excellent running back. I mean, they're just a really good team to beat Ohio State. Now, they did struggle early. They had a couple of games where they didn't exactly blow somebody out. But then Boise State's got the potential, you know, Heisman Trophy winner, too. So, you know, we'll see. That. I think the big thing is they just got to, you know, not turn the ball over, give themselves a chance. Because that was going to be the key yesterday. Three things was, one was to be able to stop the run. B, I think they felt like going into the Michigan game, and this will probably be the same at Oregon, if they can run it for 150 yards, they're going to have a shot. And this was, I think, their best rushing game of the year. And then just not turn the ball over and give themselves a chance. And turnovers and a fake punt didn't hurt either yesterday in the win. They just have to kind of replicate basically what they did yesterday.
It just has to feel so satisfying to be an Illinois fan this morning that you toppled Michigan. And I know that for me as an Indiana fan, they're coming November 9th to Bloomington, and God willing, Indiana's in a position to get to the college football playoff at that point. But regardless, a chance to be, it's just the visual of Michigan that when they do it over and over and over again, it just feels so good to be able to do that. And for you to put the headset on, see the orange in the crowd, see that place packed to the gills, it's been a long time coming.
It really has. And for, you know, Illinois fans, of course, remember, if you're old enough, to go back to 83 when they won the Big Ten championship. We were at a table the other night with David Williams, who's a Hall of Fame receiver, and several guys on that team, of course, that led them to a Big Ten title. But think about this, Tom. In the 50s, Illinois beat Michigan seven times. Since 1959, they had beaten them six times total, and four of those were in Ann Arbor. So they only had two wins since the 1950s against Michigan in Champaign. So that tells you how special it is. And people will say, well, why did they? Because they stormed the field yesterday. People from the outside probably go, why would you were ranked higher than Michigan? Why would you storm the field? Well, you don't know because you're not an Illinois fan, because if you beat Michigan around here, that's a big deal. And I'm sure it'd be the same for Indiana. Indiana fans would feel the same way. But,
you bet.
But we've been tormented by Michigan for so long and come close on several occasions. And it just means more when you beat someone like Michigan.
Absolutely. It's not like there were a bunch of 50-year-olds running around on the field. Those are students, you know. I mean, let those students do what they want. Did you get your hand out? Did anyone get a hand on one of those leather helmets for you? That's a big collector's item, I'll bet.
I know. That'd be nice to have. We were discussing that. I don't know what they're charging for those. But, yeah, that was an unbelievable. All those helmets were hand-painted, sprayed, whatever. Each helmet done in a factory in Nebraska. Those uniforms were spectacular, as you know, and you've done some play-by-play. My biggest concern was, okay, can I read the numbers, you know, from up high? And I could. They were nice and white on those jerseys, but yeah, they look spectacular.
That is awesome. Before we go, we're going to hear from SLU coach Josh Schertz here in just a moment, but give me a rundown, if you would, in our final moments here of Brad Underwood's team, Illini basketball. I was a little surprised they weren't in the top 25, but I think they will be very quickly.
Oh, I think they will, and I think basically it's because you lost so much of your scoring from last year with, you know, Shannon and Damask and all those guys. This team, they've got an outstanding roster, really from literally all over the world. But you know, 10 of the 12 guys are new, and they've got a young man from Lithuania who scored, I think, 30 points in one of the Olympic games this last summer in Paris. They've got a young man named Will Riley who's projected to be a high NBA pick at some point. I think Brad, you know, deal, and seeing him in action as he typically is, you got to play defense for Brad Underwood if you're going to play, first of all. And, you know, he's not afraid to preach that early, even to these guys who are really talented. But, you know, Ty Rogers is back, and they've got so many guys. The big key is going to be how are those going to break down? You know, who's your point guard, and what kind of style of player are they going to have? And this team, I think for a lot of people not to have them ranked, that's okay. I mean, I don't think Brad's going to worry about that. There's just so many unknowns from the outside. But I think inside they know they've got potentially a pretty special team.
Got a couple of good coaches there, Brad Underwood and Brett Bielema, as Illinois beats Michigan 21-7. Congrats on the win, Brian Barnhart. Safe travels to Eugene as you take on the Ducks.
Yep, we're flying out there this week a day early, so we'll get ready for Autzen Stadium. That should be fun.
Yeah, it will be. Thanks, as always, for joining us on KMOX.
You're welcome, Tom. Keep up the good work. Thank you.
You too. Brian Barnhart, voice of the Illini. Quick break, come back, and Josh Schertz is with us from St. Louis University right after this.
And he hits a slammer!
Graybar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs.
Billikens win! Billikens win!
Once again, from the Stifel Financial Sports Studio, Tom Ackerman.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Sports on a Sunday morning continues. Man, everything is going right now. It's an incredible time of year, and college basketball is underway. Joining us, the head coach of the Billikens, Josh Schertz. Good morning, coach.
Morning, Tom. How you doing?
Doing great. A win for you on Friday against Rockhurst, your exhibition. I know that you look at more than just the result. This is something that you will finally have some film to be able to break down against another opponent. How did things look for you? Let's start with that, as you had five Billikens scoring in double figures.
Yeah, I think, look, you know, it was really almost, you know, two separate games. I think you had the first 17 minutes. We were down. You know, we're down 33-26 with 3 minutes to play, and I think that was certainly our floor. You know, as a team, I thought you know, we were really, really poor. Not in the, you know, we obviously didn't shoot the ball particularly well, but man, we were just out physicaled, outworked in every aspect. You know, credit to Rockhurst, because I did think they came in, really punched us in the mouth and dominated the game. You know, loose balls, we struggled to get stops. So they kind of pushed us around the basket. We struggled to convert under the basket. You know, beat us in every which way. And then I thought the middle, you know, 16, 17 minutes, we outscored them by 30. And so we went from, you know, down 7 up 23. And then from the last there, 6-7 minutes, I kind of sub liberally and let everybody play, and it kind of finished where it finished. But, you know, I think, you know, we saw some good things in that middle 16 minutes. I thought we saw our floor that first 17 minutes, but had a lot of guys do some encouraging things. But certainly we have to, you know, the mentality that we came out with wasn't, you know, acceptable. And I thought the middle piece right there was much more of our identity of who we want to be.
And as part of that messaging at halftime, do you sit down and refocus as a group? Do you attribute that to the change in the start of the second half?
Well, I mean, yeah, I think, you know, I mean, look, the adjustment we made was in the mentality piece, right? Like that was, there wasn't a X and O adjustment. There wasn't that. You can't X and O your way, you know, out of playing soft, you know, out of not having appropriate physicality, you know, maybe not being locked in. I thought, you know, our offense is based on, you know, a rhythm. And you know, being in rhythm, being in sync, and to be in rhythm and be in sync, you got to be on time. We weren't on time at all. You know, offensively, we turned it over 11 times. Most of those in that first half, most of those in that first 17 minutes, I thought, you know, and a lot of times in that first half, our offense was their best offense because they were just getting runouts in transition. They had 33 points at halftime, and I think 11 or 13 of those were off our turnovers. So, you know, the biggest thing was the mentality. But I think you have to, you know, it's more a question of why do we come out with that mentality more than, you know, man, we stepped on the gas, but you can't do that. Like, you can't go into a game and take the temperature and figure out how hard you have to compete to win. You know, it's going to take 70% of my effort or 73 or 80. Like, good players, good teams, there's a level of, hey, we're coming out, we're playing as hard as we can from tip to jump. And I don't think it wasn't that we weren't playing hard, so maybe it's not framed that way, but I didn't think we played with a level of physicality, the level of force that needed to be. And that's really what changed from that halftime, the second half, was the level of force, the level of physicality that we brought to the table there in the second half, and that's why we were able to flip the game.
The Billikens shot 64% from the floor in the second half, outscored Rockhurst 56-32 in the second half, won the game 86-65. Josh Schertz is with us, another game coming up on Friday against Maryville. Let's talk about some individual performances, if you would. I know that you looked inside first, is the first thing you were just talking about. How did Kalu Anya play? I know that you want to see a lot out of him. He ends up with 12 points and 11 rebounds.
Yeah, I think Kalu did some good things. Second half, he was terrific. You know, we took him out there, but he could have, you know, could have had a really monster second half the way he played, the force and physicality in half two. I think, you know, Kalu's a guy, and we have a few guys on our team like this that, you know, and I think our whole team is this way. We have two or three guys that really drive it. You know, Kalu's growth is going to be about raising his floor. I think so many times when people think about improvement, driving improvement, they think about making their best better. And, you know, I guess the best way to equate it is like a golfer, you know, like people don't understand. So, like, if you're a good, you know, you golf a couple times a week and, you know, your best is you can, you know, you can break par, you can shoot, you know, 70 or 69, 68. But your floor is you shoot 110 when you're at your worst. You're not a great golfer. It's the same thing with basketball players. It's about raising your floor individually, collectively. Kalu's ceiling is really high. We've got to raise his floor. And he's not the only guy. We've got to do that as a team. Like that first 17 minutes of the game, you know, that was our floor. That's got to get much higher to become a good team. He played second half like he's capable of, and I thought he did some really good things on the glass. I thought he touched paint. He let us some paint touches, you know, had a double-double. But I thought his defense second half was really good. We were able to switch him. He guarded all five players in the other team. And so, you know, with Kalu, I think it's simply that. And like I said, there's two or three other guys in that same boat where they're too good of players to have their floor there. We're too good a team to have our floor there. Our floor has got to move significantly in terms of improvement. That's got to be an individual thing and of course, a collective thing.
You've seen a lot of Isaiah Swope. What did he look like, and how did he get into the swing of things on Friday?
Yeah, first half, he would tell you. I mean, same thing, you know. He was at his floor in the first half, you know, was not, you know, where he needed to be. He didn't look like the Isaiah Swope we know. When Isaiah Ceiling is one of the best players in college basketball, one of the most dynamic scorers in college basketball. His floor was, you know, what he was in the first half, and I think he reset, refocused at halftime, and, you know, he came out and he scores the first 8 points of the second half. But I thought his force on the offensive end of the second half, getting in the paint, you know, shooting the ball with confidence, you know, trying to play the way he needs to play to be successful. I thought he simplified the game, you know, for himself at halftime. I thought his defense was good the whole night. You know, they had a kid that's a pretty good shooter, came in and made 80-some threes. Isaiah did a really nice job in his matchup defensively. Even in the first half, he did a nice job defensively in his matchup. But I thought in the second half was much more of, you know, who he needs to be, where he's playing, you know, really, really in attack mode every time he touches, but attack mode to make the right play. And he's got another guy that you know, he's got to simplify his game, and he's got to raise his floor. Isaiah, when he's at his best is as good as any guard, really, in college basketball. But that floor has got to jump, just like Kalu's. For us to be good, we can't have a floor like that like we did in the first half. And those two guys, I thought, were really a big part of why we struggled in the first half. And I would say they were the two biggest reasons why we were so much better in the second half, because their impact on our team is so dramatic when you talk about Isaiah and Kalu.
And Gibson Jimerson, who everybody in America knows that he can shoot the three. So when you watched him last year, people are grabbing him and staying with him and making it difficult for him to get the ball or at least get off a clean shot. How has he looked both in practice and Friday from that perspective, moving without the ball, trying to get open looks?
Yeah, Gibbs been terrific. I mean, he's been he's a guy that's been, you know, our most dependable player. If you look at the summer to the fall, you know, obviously, you know, he and Larry didn't shoot it great. When you look at, you know, the threes, I think there were 2 for 15 combined. But, you know, shooting is its own thing. That's kind of a fickle deal. There's going to be nights where it goes in and nights where it doesn't. The key is take good ones. Gibson's moves well without the ball, and I thought he did a nice job on the offensive end of, you know, on a night where he made 1 3, he still found his way to 14 points, right? you know, he was able to get downhill. He drove some closeouts. I thought he did a nice job of trying to, you know, he got a nice great cuddle on the baseline and got a layup. He found ways to score without the three ball going in. I lose no sleep over Gibson Jimerson shooting the basketball. So I know that's going to be, you know, something we're going to be able to count on, the, you know, his career with us. He's been the most dependable guy, like I said, on our team, you know, this summer, this fall. I think Gibbs is going to have a great year. He's got to continue to clean up things defensively. He knows that. And we do as a group as well. But I love his attitude, his focus level. He's all about the right things. And that, you know, like I thought, you know, with his shooting, his floor on Friday night was still pretty high.
And your leading scorer after Jimerson and Swope had 14 apiece was Amari McCautry. I'm interested in him. Now, he's an explosive player. He's 6'5", Coach. That is quite a body to grow into. He's young.
Yeah, no, he really is. He's actually grown an inch since he's been here. He's 6'6" now with a 7-foot wingspan. Amari does not look like a freshman physically, for sure. He's the most physical driver in our program. He's probably the best on our team at touching paint and you know, getting downhill and putting pressure on the rim. You know, he's a guy that as he figures out you know, how to kind of eliminate losing, you know, he does a lot of good things and he does a lot of things that have scratched your head. I will say this about him. His trajectory has been really good. When you look at his growth from June 3rd to October, you know, 20th, it's been really, really significant. I think as his trajectory continues, he's a guy that's as talented as anybody in our basketball program. When you look at his ability to handle the ball, his ability to touch paint, his ability defensively, he comes over on a rotation as a point, you know, he's kind of a point guard, combo guard, comes over and blocks a center. On a baseline drive, dunk attempt. He does some things that you know, you don't see many guys who are combo guards being able to do, and that goes back to, you know, his size and versatility. He's got good feet. We needed him in that game because the way they played us, they were out really trying to deny and pressure and be physical and blow stuff up, and his ability to put his shoulders down and get his shoulders by people and then force rotation, get the ball to the rim was obviously a big part of why we were able to kind of crack that open. He got all 16 of his points in the second half. So he's a guy that we got to continue to develop because he's got a chance to really if he can get to where he's able to play consistent minutes and he does enough good stuff, I think that changes our ceiling as a team because of how talented he is individually.
He certainly seems like your kind of player. Finally, Friday night, you'll be taking on Maryville, another chance for fans to see you in person before the real games begin, an exhibition. You'll have the lights on and the band in and the place going at Chaffetz Arena on a Friday night. Preston Ingram is the head coach at Maryville. He used to be down the street at Missouri Baptist. So a chance for one of the local schools to come in and play it.
Yeah, no, it's a good opportunity for us. We need it. You know, we got a young group that's learning how to, you know, kind of come together. Young group in terms of, you know, playing together, you know, and so these experiences are invaluable for us. The opportunity to compete with the lights on, have fans there to play through some stuff. I think that, you know, it's obviously a huge part. We've got a lot of growth. We've got to undertake here in the next 15 days before we tip it off against Santa Clara. The majority of that growth has to occur on the court, you know, on the practice court where nobody's watching, but the opportunity to play outside competition, to see yourself against somebody else, to have what happened this past Friday where, you know, the competition shows you, hey, this is where you're deficient. This is some things you're doing well. Here's where you got to grow. Here are some issues that were presented, and you need the competition to show that. We know it's a great opportunity to go out, compete against a good team in Maryville. Preston's done a really nice job. One of their assistants is my former assistant at Lincoln Memorial, Lance Ignatz. So I know, obviously known Lance forever. It'll be fun to get out there, compete against those guys. And like you said, I have a local school in here. And hopefully Chaffetz, I thought there was a good atmosphere, good energy on this past Friday against Rockhurst. Hopefully it's as good or better here coming up against Maryville. And then we tee it off for real.
It's a 7 o'clock tip on Friday night at Chaffetz Arena as the Billikens take on Maryville. Josh Schertz, always great talking ball with you. Appreciate it. Have a great Sunday.
Hey, appreciate you, Tom. Thanks so much. Have a great day.
Always great to talk to Josh Schertz. Just recorded that with him before the show. They are practicing right now. Schertz tells me that Robbie Avila will get some work today and quite possibly tomorrow. They're going to continue to watch that sprained ankle. And if he is good to go this week, if he doesn't have any setbacks, he could see some minutes on Friday against Maryville, maybe 12 to 18 minutes of work on Friday. So we'll keep an eye on that. Obviously, they are a much better team with Robbie Avila on the floor running that offense. Let's take a break. The Blues get a win last night at Enterprise Center against the Carolina Hurricanes. We'll hear all about it. Drew Bannister and players next on KMOX.
Graybar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs.
Milliken's win! Milliken's win!
Once again, from the Stifel Financial Sports Studio, Tom Ackerman.
Back on the show, as the Blues also were victorious yesterday. They won 4-3 over Carolina. The Blues are 4-2 on the season. They fell behind in this game, 1-0 after the end of the first period, but they erupt for three goals in the second period. They get one from Matthew Joseph. They get one from Jake Neighbors, each of them with their second of the season. And the first of the season from Dylan Holloway. We'll hear from him in just a moment. Here's Coach Drew Bannister on that second period.
Yeah, I thought for me, a lot of it started at the offensive blue line. Just, I think we had 12 turnovers at the offensive blue line. And, you know, when you're doing that, you start to chase the game. Like, we didn't play to the goal line. We weren't able to get to a forecheck. And again, you know, against a team like that, they transition the puck so well, you know. Skilled forwards, you know, that just plays into their game.
Seemed like the Shen line got you back with the forecheck.
Yep, and, you know, I thought as a whole, our group in the second period was committed to playing to the goal line, and we were allowed to, you know, get our forwards in the forecheck, get our D more active to keep pucks live on the walls, and, you know, then the offensive opportunities start to come for us.
If Bulldog's not contributing offensively, do subtle little plays like the one he made on the Neighbor's goal, or just get a stick in there to be able to get an intercept, are those the things you're looking for from him?
Yeah, and I thought, even going back to last game, I thought Boldy had an outstanding game. I thought probably his third period was one of the best periods I've seen him play as a Blue. And I thought he continued making an effort to finish his checks. His stick has been much, much better, and it's starting to break up plays and create offense going the other way.
Zach Bolduc and the Blues with a win 4-3 over Carolina. Drew Bannister talking about Bolduc there. He's an exciting young player. He only had 8 minutes, 52 seconds of ice time yesterday, but he contributed an assist on that goal from Neighbors, the second of the game. The third goal of the game was scored by Dylan Holloway to cap the third period scoring.
I felt that was the only thing I could do. I was in tight, so I figured why not try it. But, you know, I've had some chances the last couple of games, and it was definitely nice to see him go on.
Were you having to kind of track it the whole way, just maybe not sure that it was going to drop in, just stay with it, I guess?
Yeah, I just had to make sure. I just wanted that one bad. So, you know, I'm just happy to see it go in.
What do you feel like wasn't going right in the first period, and what needed to change moving forward after that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty cliche to say we got to get pucks in deep, but I think we were honestly just turning pucks over too much in the neutral zone and trying to be a bit too cute. So once we kind of got to our game and, you know, got pucks deep and then hammered their D, I think it slowed the game down a bit. And, eventually led to some more ozone time and more offensive success.
Holloway's kind of a fun player. He's got some speed. He can be a bit of a pest, some feistiness as well, and tough to play against. And the Blues get the win by a final of 4-3. You know who else had a nice game? Joel Hofer. Hofer, back-to-back games. He shuts out the Islanders on Thursday. And then yesterday, I know he gave up three, but he had 37 saves yesterday, did Hofer. So that gives Bennington a bit of a rest as the Blues get the win 4-3 over Carolina. Don't look now, but the Blues are 4-2 on the season. They have 8 points, two off the lead in the Central. Dallas is the leader. They're 5-1 with 10 points. Utah off to a nice start, 4-1-1 for 9 points. Winnipeg, Minnesota, and the Blues all tied at 8 points apiece. Chicago has 5. Colorado's 1-4. 2 points. You know who's, they made all those moves in the offseason. Nashville's 0-5. Not a point to be had for the Nashville Predators. We'll come back with a big 11 o'clock hour on KMOX after this.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.